Europe, we know it's not doing as well as the US. Obviously, growth is so much slower. Germany has been hit particularly hard. But does that mean there's an opportunity to cut rates sooner? And could that help the economy get its mojo back? And if it does, will it bounce back everywhere? Or is Germany still going to struggle? And how much of that depends on the relationship with China? We take a deep dive on where Europe is right now and where it's heading. That's this week.
The Morning Call from NAB with Phil Dobby.
The Weekend Edition.
And as always, the views expressed on the Weekend Edition are not necessarily the same as the views held by NAB. But we are a broad church and we like a variety of opinions, which is what the Weekend Edition is all about. Now, Europe. This last week has shown more of a dividing line between the US and Europe. The IMF forecast released this week, for example, has shown US growth projected to be 2.7% this year, compared to a projection made by the IMF back in January of just 2.1%. So that's quite an upgrade to their forecast. In the same period, Europe has been downgraded slightly from 0.9% growth that was projected in January to just 0.8%, the latest figures for this year. So it's clear the US economy is powering ahead, whereas Europe is being left in its wake. Why is that? And is it the reason why there are talks now of an earlier cut in Europe, whilst the US seems to be pushing cuts further and further back? Christine Lagarde said after the last ECB meeting that if disinflation continues as per their projections, then it's going to be time to moderate their restrictive monetary policy. And the timing for that has been taken by many people as meaning June. I mean, the Swiss National Bank has already done it, whilst the Bank of England was indicating it's going to wait till after the Fed, although that seems to be open to question now. But interesting how Europe has suffered worse inflation than the United States and most other places, and yet now it seems like it's going to be one of the first to cut rates. Well, let's talk to someone who watches the Eurozone economy very closely. Melanie De Bono is a senior Europe economist at Pantheon Macroeconomics in London. So Eurozone inflation, Mel, is down to 2.4% as the headline CPI number. So that obviously is lower than the United States, or most of the West, actually. But of course, it did rise much higher than many other places. It got up to 10.6% because of oil and food and supply chains. So the effect up and down has been a lot more pronounced than the US and elsewhere. So is it safe to assume that now it's got down there, it's going to stay down, I wonder?
Well, I mean, a big reason why they would go ahead and cut in June is because inflation has come down so much more sharply than elsewhere. So, you know, inflation in the Eurozone is, as you said, much closer to the target, the 2% target for the ECB than it is for the US, for example. So really is no reason for them to wait for the Fed to go, definitely, but also to keep monetary policy in such a restrictive state. You know, the current deposit rate is around 100 to 150 basis points above its neutral. It doesn't need to stay there when you're this close to target.
But the approach is very different to, you know, the approach that we're seeing in the United States, isn't it? You know, which is very much, well, why do we need to bother? There's no rush. And yet Europe could be saying the same thing, couldn't they? You know, unless they really feel like they need to. Do they actually need to cut to help the economy to recover? And if so, because there's a lot of talk about this just being one cut and then maybe they're going to sit on their hands. I mean, what good's that going to do if they just have one cut and then it's in isolation?
Well, I mean, we definitely don't seem to be doing just one cut and stopping. For them to go once and stop, it would have to be because the data don't cooperate. So wage growth to go up or inflation to jump sharply. However, most of the consensus is actually looking for them to cut in June and then to continue cutting. As it stands, we're slightly different from the consensus because we think that they're adamant that they're data dependent, and given where inflation has fallen and that wage growth is coming down, which is something that they've really been keeping an eye on, that they'll actually keep going straight away. So we've got four consecutive cuts in four consecutive meetings. You know, do not need to hold until between June and September. There's no reason for that if that there's a reasoning to cut and to limit or bring down the deposit rates or policy rates from the restrictive level that we're at. Cutting from 4% to 3.75, you know, cutting once, that's not going to make much of a difference.
No, but I've heard people saying that, but you're saying four cuts. So that's quite this year, that is a lot. And what does that do to the euro if, you know, if, for example, say the Fed just doesn't move at all this year?
Well, I mean, that could definitely lead to a depreciation in the euro and therefore could sort of funnel in into higher inflation at a later point. But we don't think that that's one thing that would, you know, stop the ECB given where everything else is going. It doesn't just look at the picture of the euro and nothing else. It has said at the last meeting, it is not Fed dependent, it is data dependent, and therefore it won't really be scared off by a slight change in the euro. It's from what we know from past meetings, the euro would have to fall by around 5% for them just to push up the core inflation forecast by 0.1 percentage points. You know, that would be, if that's not going to happen, even if the Fed doesn't go from, because that would be looking at the euro falling to parity over the coming months. But even if it did, you know, that, like literally them raising the core forecast by 0.1 isn't really something that would push us to say they're not going to cut by four times this year.
And what's that going to do to GDP? If we do see four cuts, are we going to see, are we going to see, you know, GDP forecasts, if you're sort of on the outer in terms of expectations, does that mean we can expect to see GDP forecasts revised upwards as well? Because obviously that's the reason they'd be doing it.
Well, at the moment, our GDP forecasts already incorporate the forecasts that we have from the ECB. The unfortunate circumstances are that the growth only responds to changes in the policy rates with a considerable lag. So actually, really, the impetus on GDP growth that we see from the rate cuts only really starts to feed in Q4, perhaps in late Q3. And we see that coming through higher investment. But until that happens, it will be other forces that lead GDP growth higher in the eurozone.
So why is inflation so much lower then in Europe? I mean, you're saying it's because there's less wage growth, there's obviously less labor pressures. Mm-hmm. What is different? Why is Europe so different to many other parts of the world, particularly the United States?
Well, I think first, to take a step back, the labor market in the eurozone is very tight right now. You know, the unemployment rate is at a record low, which is very impressive for the eurozone. We're at 6.5%, which is, you know, would have been unheard of just a few years ago. It does still have a tight labor market. However, we don't have the risks that you do have in the US from the labor market and wage growth that potentially would push inflation up higher. So that's why we think that the ECB is really going to be, you know, they're concerned about it. They've been drumming on about wage growth being potentially staying too high. But what we're seeing is that firms are taking a hit to their profit margin. So the ECB, if it sees that unit labor costs and wage growth are staying high, but margins are falling, then that basically tells you inflation can still come down, even if the wage numbers are still a little uncomfortable for the bank, in which case, you know, it doesn't need to keep policy so tight.
Right. So that's the sweet spot, isn't it? Where those extra costs, those extra labor costs are being absorbed by companies, that people have real wage growth, so they've got more money to spend. And you think Europe is getting into that situation?
Yes, we do. We definitely do, because, you know, inflation has fallen so sharply and wage growth is now also tailing off, because we think inflation leads wage growth. So it will come down in response to the fall in inflation that we've seen over recent months, but it's still much higher. So what you get is a boost to consumers' real income. They lost a lot of real income over the recent years because of the energy crisis and the surge in oil prices and et cetera. But now what they're going to get is a boost. So even if excess savings from COVID and COVID era have more or less dissipated, now consumers actually have more buck to spend. So we think actually what's going to lead growth over the coming quarters is the consumer, because they'll go out and now spend because they have more to spend with.
So long as they're confident, though, of course, that's the big question, isn't it? If they're worried about the state of the global economy, they might try and build those savings back up again.
That is true. So consumer confidence has remained subdued. It's edging up, but it has remained very much subdued compared to where it's been historical, especially, for example, based on the European Commission's measure. But it doesn't tend to have a very good lead relationship on what happens quarter on quarter. So if consumer confidence boosts or rises very sharply, that's not necessarily means that consumer spending is going to rise very quickly in this quarter. So it might come with a lag, but not necessarily instant. So just the fact that consumer confidence is still low, we wouldn't see that as they're not going to go out and spend. You know, we're seeing that in some of the numbers where, for example, services spending in January skyrocketed, rebounded from falling in December, and consumer confidence at that point was still very low.
January is a bit of a funny month, though, isn't it? Because it's just after Christmas. We see that around the world, don't we? That those numbers, and we have the sales pre-Christmas, so spending numbers are a bit all over the place, aren't they? November, December, January.
It's true. Difficult. Especially with the, now rise of Black Friday, yeah, also in Europe. And
two months of consequences for supposedly, yeah, 1 week of sales. So what about business as well? So, I mean, in theory, you lower interest rates, that's going to encourage more businesses to borrow more and invest more. So greater investment, that means greater growth. But you're not going to do that again if businesses aren't confident about the future. And if you look at Germany, the European powerhouse, their export demands have been lagging because obviously they sell a lot to China, and there's a lot of uncertainty around that.
There is a lot of uncertainty right now, especially because, it's sort of Brussels is starting to think of how can we tackle this threat, let's say, from China's, surge into the EV market, and whether or not that's going to lead to any response from Europe. And yes, so German firms, which are most exposed to this, have remained much more, let's say, risk averse than all the others. However, what we've seen from even the surveys that we follow, like the IFO and the PMI, is that firms are starting to see, a rebound, or let's say a smaller fall in demand through a new orders measures. And so there is definitely a slight uptick in sentiment, starting to bubble.
Right. So while Germany is struggling, I mean, Spain and Italy are doing somewhat better, aren't they? So why is that?
Spain and Italy are doing better because they export less goods and they export more services. So tourism is a big part of their economy. And that is why what we're seeing in their surveys is that the surge is coming from services. We do have to sort of caveat that with the fact that ever since COVID, the numbers have had an impact on them because of the seasonals. So statisticians have had sort of a rough time trying to match up the seasonals because of what COVID did to the data. So some of the increase that we're seeing in services indices should not be completely trusted, but we do at least believe the direction of travel is up. And that is also reflected in some of the early services spending figures, tourism spend numbers that we're seeing in Spain, for example. So yes, those two economies have done much better, did much better than the France and Germany, for example, among the big four in the second half of last year, and are probably likely to continue to outperform this year. We've recently raised our forecast for Italy and Spain, in fact.
So the EU obviously is keen, as they see the economy recover, they might be waiting a while for this, but they're keen to get back to how things are and to see government subsidies, which they see as distorting the market. Obviously, first of all, energy subsidies they want to see done away with, but any sorts of subsidies, I mean, that is sort of part of the modus operandi, isn't it, for the EU? Whereas the US has been, the government there has been pumping money into the economy. It really depends on how Keynesian you are as to whether this is the right approach or not. But is it the right, a more stringent fiscal policy? Could that be detrimental to Europe right now? Because it seems like they are looking for growth. They're not really quite sure where it's going to come from. There needs to be some sort of, like the parish pump to try and get the economy moving. I mean, don't they need to think a bit more like the USA right now?
Well, at this point, yes, the EU rules, which were, as most of your listeners probably know, removed or shelved during the COVID crisis to allow countries to be able to spend and support their economy to come out of the hit from COVID and then subsequently the hit from the energy crisis. These will return now. From the 1st of January, we are going to get the new EU fiscal rules. So countries are preparing to be slapped on the wrist, as it were, from the European Commission, because they probably won't be in line with them, or at least many of them won't be in line with them. But this has happened many times in the past. So many countries have not been in line with the 3% deficit target limit that the EU imposed. Many countries have been above the 60% threshold for their debt ratios. And in the past, the EU European Commission has been actually very stringent or has come out very strongly. This, we think, will change. The new EU fiscal rules, as they've presented so far, but still have to be transmitted into EU law, suggest that it will be a lot more lenient when it comes to certain expenditures, if they're for investment purposes, namely for example, the green transition or now into defense, because that's also come up in the agenda in the EU, that they'll basically close an eye to it. Even if the country is exceeding the limits, which now will focus on what the government spends, then if it's for these certain circumstances, it will just close an eye to it and let them be. So we actually think that European fiscal policy will remain quite accommodative over the coming 2 years or so.
Right. And you mentioned two areas there, you know, the green transition and defence. I mean, are they the two big growth potentials for Europe? I mean, it wouldn't be the first time, would it, that we've had an economy struggling and defence spending has helped helped see the way through. I wonder whether, you know, we're going to see that again.
Yes, we think so. And not just because it's needed, because a lot of these countries, you know, our defense has been, or the defense spending has been quite low in recent years, but also because there's pressure from NATO for these economies, especially the big guys, to be spending 2% of their GDP on defense. And therefore, you know, we think that this pressure will increase. What happens if later this year the US election leads to a change in government? We're not sure. But it's whether or not
it's very likely. Yeah.
Greater spending or less. But yes, you know, if the US sort of pulls out of that, then it will probably mean that most of the European countries have to foot a greater bill if NATO wants to keep up its spending. But yes, it's definitely one of the big reasons why, you know, fiscal policy will remain more accommodative than it was in the past.
Yeah. And you touched on tariffs on imported electric vehicles from China. I mean, they do make very good electric cars, I have to say. And it's a real problem, isn't it? So you impose tariffs, but I mean, that's only half the problem. Are we going to see Germany kicking in with big, and other countries kicking in Italy, perhaps, kicking in with, you know, large-scale production of electric vehicles? Is that also going to be part of the recovery plan?
Well, I mean, to be clear, we do not think that the European Commission will go hard on tariffs on China for EVs, because, first of all, it's a slow-moving vehicle. You know, for the EU to all agree on pushing up tariffs, there's only one tariff for the EU that's imposed on everybody outside of the Union. That's called the Common External Tariff. For them to be able to raise that, you know, they have to all have to agree. So far, what they've done is just open an investigation into whether or not China's subsidies to these sectors are unlawful or unlawful competition, as it were. And so we don't think it will go very hard on China on this. And one of the large reasons for that is that there are countries which have big firms which have actually production there, Germany included. So if you impose tariffs, you're basically shooting yourself in the foot there. Instead, what I think would be a better approach would be for Europe to start, you know, funneling funds into that sector and sort of build a competition sector on this side if they really wanted to go down that route. If they did come to it, that tariffs were imposed on China, then yeah, Germany would be hit quite hard given the exposure that it has and the fact that it's more reliant on these sectors than some other European economies.
So it sounds like it's a confidence play, doesn't it, in many respects, that if people don't talk down the economy, then Europe's got a chance. It's just talking up the economy. If there's, you know, because there are jobs, there is spending available, domestic demand can be created. They have to live with the fact that maybe there's not going to be quite as much export demand, which is a danger for Germany, but for the rest of Europe, and there's a lot of the rest of Europe. It really is just building up sufficient confidence for people to be able to use the money they're earning and spending it and seeing sustained growth.
Yes, exactly. I mean, at this point, you know, it's very hard for commentators usually looking at Europe when they see so many risks and so many economies to be positive. So we won't blame them for that. And there are risks. So, you know, one big one that comes to mind is actually in Italy. So although we're seeing their growth be much faster than elsewhere, it's got this super bonus, which has been is a tax relief for home improvements, which has been boosting investment there. And to the extent that it's bought forward investment, then at some point we're going to see an investment crash in Italy. And we've been homing in on this, that, you know, there's a real risk that people need to be watching out for here. And our forecasts are low, but they don't show, you know, it's because we've been quite conservative on that risk there and the size of the fall in investment. But in terms of the rest of the economy, you know, there are risks also elsewhere. But at this point, we think the tide is turning for the economy. So it's just a case of wanting all the others to catch up and say, hey, it's actually getting positive for Europe.
And incentives like that, is that, would that be wrapped up in the sort of thing that the EU is trying to put a stop to from the beginning of January next year?
Definitely. I mean, even the country, even Italy, is trying to put a stop to it. So it came in as something that the government started back in 2020, thinking it was going to boost GDP, which it really did. But they didn't think that they would be spending that much money on it. You know, the government basically started paying Italians 110%. So they're paying you to change your roof or your boiler or improve anything. And of course, Italians loved that and all signed up to it. And they did not foresee that much demand for it. So ever since last year, they've started, you know, unwinding this benefit, saying, oh, now we'll only pay you 90%. Now we'll only pay you 70%. And it is slated to end next year. But of course, it's still very attractive. And because of the high demand, Italy has had to revise up its budget deficit forecasts for the recent years because it's meant so much more spending than
they expected. Incredible. All right. Well, and the elephant in the room, obviously, is what happens in the Middle East as well. So if Houthi rebels attack more ships, if supply chains are more heavily impacted through the Red Sea, we get more geopolitical uncertainty. I mean, Europe pays the price for that because it's closer to all of that action, and could that force a rethink on the timing of rate cuts? How big, in your forecast, how big a risk have you put that? Have you factored that in as?
So because we cannot forecast geopolitics, it is not in our base case. It is purely a risk to our forecast. We already have, you know, the main channel through which the events that are happening in the Middle East could impact inflation would be via energy inflation or perhaps a rise in shipping costs. We are not seeing a rise in shipping costs yet. Even when there was conflict in the Red Sea, we were not seeing a big surge in shipping costs. But that is a risk. Via the energy profile, we already have energy inflation rising. So, and we still have rate cuts. For us to change that view, energy inflation would have to surge and stay sustainably high. For that to happen, the oil price would have to jump, you know, well over 100 again and stay there. So it is a risk, but it's not currently in our base case. But that would be the channel through which it would impact rates.
So, and do you think, just finally, do you think, you know, this, Germany's dominance within the European economy, do you think because it is suffering, you know, more than other parts of Europe now because of its dependence on exports, if they don't come back in a hurry, are we going to find that Germany's place within Europe is a little bit more diminished? I mean, it might still be dominant. It might just be a little less dominant than before. Is it going to have quite the same bargaining power with the rest of Europe that it's enjoyed in the past?
Well, I mean, the size of the economy is still much larger than the next one down, Germany. So, you know, Germany accounts for a third of the Eurozone by itself. So if it does become smaller, again, not on our base case, but if it does become smaller, it will still be the lead influencer in the Eurozone. We do not think that's going to change. The fact that others are catching up, this is only a natural progression. You know, the size of these economies, when you've got economies all trying to converge to each other, it is only natural that the smaller economies would sort of have more impetus to catch up and more scope to catch up. And that is what is happening and what has been happening in the past, and it's likely to continue.
Right. Well, it's been great talking to you. It sounds like we need to adjust our thinking a little bit because, I mean, the rhetoric has been, certainly over the last year, hasn't it, that you know, that Europe is in a bad place. But it sounds like, you know, it's getting out of it.
Exactly.
Yeah. Good to talk, Melanie. We'll catch you again soon. Okay. Thanks. And that is the weekend edition for this week. We're looking at Australia's role in combating climate change next week. Do we have the technology and the resources to really make a difference and to profit from it, of course? Alison Reeve from the Grattan Institute will be joining me for that one. And I'm back on Monday morning, of course, for the next edition of The Morning Call. I'm Phil Dobby for NAB. I'll see you then.
The weekend edition.